Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Daniel coming to you live from the EMS Lounge, sponsored by blogtalkradio.com. I'm going to do a quick 30-minute podcast on permissive hypotension. I've had a lot of requests to kind of go over this. About some people heard me talk about it at the Alabama EMS conference when I did my piece on the trauma triad of death. All right, so this is the new standard of trauma resuscitation. It's been around for a while, you know, and as everything else in EMS, it kind of takes it a while to get out to us. But permissive hypotension in the trauma arena is evidence-based practice. I mean, it is, you know, there's been studies done on it. This is, you know, it's a good quality patient care, and we're not really doing it. I know it's an education thing, even on my part. When, you know, when we first came into EMS, you know, we're taught everything in mnemonics and, you know, ABCs, big lines, big IVs, big amounts of fluids. And actually years down the road, we find out that, you know, we're not doing right by our patients. We're not, you know, giving good quality pre-hospital care when it comes to our fluid administration. Especially here in the state of Alabama, because all the fluids that our pre-hospital ground units can carry are the 0.9% normal saline. And if anybody's heard any of my podcast teachings, sat through any of my lectures, you've heard me talk about 0.9% normal saline and just how bad of a fluid it is. And, you know, of course, in my opinion, being a, you know, just a crystalloid solution, which does nothing for our patients on the cellular level. When we go to, you know, replace volume in a patient who is losing blood, not crystalloids, you know, all we're doing is thinning out the oil. So with crystalloids, you know, our normal salines, they are a hyperchloremic solution. All right, so that means, you know, they've got a high chloride, and they're also, you know, a real acidotic fluid. And just through my own ignorance, just because, one, we weren't taught this, you know, the normal saline is a real acidotic fluid. It's got a pH around 5.0 to 5.5, and we know that, you know, anything below 7.0 on the pH scale is acidotic. So not to get too much into the, you know, the pathophysiology of the body, we have to look, as just pre-hospital practitioners, we have to look at what we're putting back into our, all right? So we arrive on scene of a scene called GSW. Patient's got multiple GSW gunshot wounds. He's lost a fair amount of blood, you know, real hypotensive, diaphoretic. You know, we've got our trauma kit with us. You know, we're snatching clothes, doing quick blood sweeps, assessing for any life-threatening hemorrhage, we're plugging holes, getting them loaded up, getting them out to the hospital under our 10-minute platinum on scene time. And we elect to initiate some fluids. I had a medic one time years ago tell me, he looked at me and said, "Boy, I'm no pastel paramedic. Everybody gets 14s or 16s. I said, "All right." So, you know, we elect to start some IVs, start chasing that rabbit. We notice the first blood pressure is 80 over 40 systolic. Got good intact radial pulses, just low BP. So we know just through using our critical thinking process, that this patient's more than likely suffering from, you know, hypovolemia and fluid loss. So we elect to start this mass transfusing large amounts of crystalloid fluids. All right, so we're hanging bags, putting blood pressure cuffs around them, you know, just wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Well, we, you know, get our, you know, what we want. We get their blood pressures up. You know, they come up to around 115, 120 systolic. You know, we're slapping hands, grabbing butts, you know, at the ER after we've dropped the patient off. Come to find out, we've actually done this patient a disservice. We've actually hurt this patient. All right. And, you know, early in my career, you know, this stuff was just not taught to me. It wasn't until I, you know, came into the air medical field that I realized I'd been doing this wrong for, you know, many, many of years. So, we talked about normal saline being a hyperchloremic solution, okay? It's an acidotic fluid. So, when our patient laying there bleeding on the ground, you know, he's bleeding plasma, platelets, white blood cells, red blood cells, and we go to return into the circulatory system, what? A hyperchloremic acidotic fluid, okay? So are we hurting or are we helping our patients? All right, and that's what we need to ask ourselves. So that's where this permissive hypertension comes in. You know, there's a lot of studies going on right now. One that I was involved with, the Prosh study, you know, talking about the benefit of pre-hospital blood administration. You know, overseas we had Plasmolite, Hepsiban. You know, we had a lot of good fluids that we could, you know, kind of pick from when we had, you know, major hypovolemic, you know, issues with our patients, just because we did it a lot. So we have to look at what we have here. So we've got this 0.9% hyperchloremic acidotic fluid. All right. Let's say we've got a patient with BP of, let's just say, 71 over 50. All right. Patient's got a MAP of around 60. All right. Ask yourself, kind of write that down, look at it, think about what you would do. Would you, you know, chase this blood pressure? Or we're going to look in the map at the mean arterial pressure, knowing as advanced clinicians that we are, a map of above 60, this patient still has good quality end organ perfusion. Okay, so that's where the permissive hypertension comes in. It is basically just a selective fluid resuscitation. All right, we know that now that we're advanced clinicians, advanced practitioners, that we go more off of MAP pressures than we do systolics. Okay, early in my career, I was taught to chase numbers. I was taught to be a subjective paramedic and chase numbers. You know, we knew early on in our careers in education that the patient had a systolic BP at 90, we had to get it up. We didn't really know why, but we had to get it up. Well, a lot of the literature out there and most of the education now on the critical care level, you know, we're taught to treat MAP pressures. So we have a MAP pressure of 60 to 65 that is enough to get good end organ perfusion to our vital organs. There's data out there. You can Google it. I'll post some of it on my Facebook page. You know, that anywhere from about 55 to 60 on the MAP pressure, we are still perfusing kidneys. Okay, and now as advanced clinicians, and you've heard me say, the goal-directed therapy in fluid resuscitation is urine output. All right, so when we're, you know, if I'm at the helicopter or on the ground unit, whatever, when I start mass transfusing fluids, I look at my MAP pressures and try to get it to where, you know, we're at least 60 to 65. And obviously in your TBIs, you want it a little bit higher for that good cerebral perfusion pressure. But I go for 60 to 65, okay? You know, and like I said, we're taught, you know, very differently all the way from, you know, EMT basic to EMT advanced to paramedic until you get to the critical care level or start, you know, listening to the EMS Lounge podcast or following Shane Driver and I's post, you know, Flightbridge Ed, you know, a couple of these advanced practitioners that are in the education world to start bringing this new standard in. All right, so you know, we know that in EMS we are subjective creatures. We like stuff that we can see. Okay, so let's say we start, you know, mass transfusing large amounts of fluids. So what are we doing to these patients down to the cellular level, like down to the, you know, just that one in a, you know, in a billion cells in our body? What are we doing to that cell with an isotonic fluid? Nothing. So we know that, you know, the crystalloid fluids have no direct effect on the cellular level. All right, and there's data out there that say from 1 liter of fluid that we, you know, mass transfuse into these patients, only one third of it, around 250, some studies will say 333, most of that I found are about 250, actually remain in or make it to the intravascular system after about 13 to 15 minutes. So all these fluids that were, you know, busting into these patients, after about 10 to 15 minutes, are all back out into the interstitial spaces. Okay, so we know that crystalloid fluids have no volume expanding capabilities, and they're hyperchloremic acidotic fluid. All right, so that's just on the cellular level. Let's ask yourself, you know, brief, real quick, what's another thing that, you know, that happens when we mass transfuse these patients? All right, we're increasing the interstitial pressure when we're just pushing all this volume in. Eric Bauer, owner of Flight Bridge Ed, he's a flight paramedic, unbelievable educator and clinician, works at Air Methods. I follow his blogs and podcasts religiously, and he uses an example of increasing the interstitial pressure. It's like you have a Coke bottle. You poke a hole in it, and you start squeezing that bottle. All right, what's going to happen? Well, all that fluid's going to, you know, be pushed up and start being pushed out. Well, I kind of tweaked that a little bit because we poke some holes in the bottle, we increase it, we start pushing everything out, but yet we keep pushing stuff back in. Well, what's going to happen eventually is all the Coke's going to be out and it's going to be watered down. All right, and that's what we're doing in massive hemorrhage is we're increasing the interstitial pressure, we're hemodiluting our patients, we're dropping their core body temperature because we know 99% of our ground units out there don't have fluid warmers. Hypothermia, you know, and everybody that knows me knows how I'm about the trauma triad, and I'm really passionate about it. So you can kind of see the cascade of events. So when we start hemodiluting these patients and we're increasing our interstitial pressures, we're not only, you know, increasing the pressure and forcing these already, you know, parts of the thrombin and all that have already started clotting off, we're pushing those out. So we're putting the pressure at the door. We're forcing those out. We're hemodiluting them. We're pushing out what hemoglobin the patients had left, and we're causing more damage. Okay, we are now causing harm to our patients. And it's not, you know, because we're bad paramedics and we want to hurt people. It's an education thing. All right, so we know when, you know, we get on scene, you know, we've got a hypotensive patient, but they've got a MAP pressure of 60 to 65. We know now that at 60 to 65 and above, we have enough to have good quality end-organ perfusion. Okay, and it's good patient care. We don't want to keep, you know, hitting our patients with massive amounts of fluid, you know, that's doing nothing on the volume expanding level, and it's not affecting, you know, them on the cellular level. You know, with our hypertonic fluids, those have an effect on the cellular level. These crystalloids don't. In Air Medical, we carry normal saline and LR, and LR, you know, is often referred to, you know, is the one you can do the least damage with. But, you know, there's tons of, you know, evidence-based practice on this, and a lot of EMS systems across the U.S., you know, are huge into the permissive hypotension. And as practitioners here, especially in our you know, direct area, we have to kind of keep this in mind. You know, we've always been taught, you know, on subjective basis, and we're taught on numbers. You know, everybody, you know, and I, even myself, oh, we can't give morphine if their BP is below 100. You know, well, if they've got good end-organ perfusion, we could probably treat some pain. You know, and that kind of goes for a lot of stuff. So it kind of ingrains that subjective, numerical, you know, like we look at it as, you know, as an object instead of actually, you know, treating our patients. You know, we found through, you know, data and research that, you know, over the years, back when I first joined the military, you know, we would bleed patients till they were pink. All right, so we all know, you know, from many of our lectures and from stuff you've heard that, you know, ultimately our trauma patients with, you know, any type of massive blood loss, they need source control. They need a surgeon. All right, we're not going to fix them with, you know, these crystalloid fluids. All right, we're only going to make them worse. So when we're hitting these patients with fluids, because we know that our patients don't bleed saline, they bleed blood, and that's what they need. They need packed red blood cells, they need platelets, they need plasma. You know, and, you know, in the, I guess in the effort of financials, it's kind of hard for us to, you know, entertain the idea of pre-hospital blood administration, but that's what these patients need. So we need to, you know, fluid resuscitate our patients through MAPS of above, you know, 60 to 65, and TBIs, you want it a little bit higher. You know, you can calculate fairly easily a cerebral perfusion pressure, and you just take your MAP pressure minus your ICP, and that'll give you your cerebral perfusion pressure. We know that normal you know, ICPs are anywhere from 5 to 15, excuse me. So let's kind of keep that in mind. You know, we're kind of, like I said, I've had a lot of people asking about this. And one thing I always encourage people is to know your lab values. We have to know on the cellular level, you know, down to, like I said in the trauma triad lecture, down to the very mitochondria where the ATP conversion goes on, of how to treat our patients. I got a fellow named Randy Gray, who was a paramedic instructor here in Birmingham for a long time, and he always used to make us know lab values, and I was always at one that, we don't need to know. Why do we need to know lab values? That's nursing stuff. We don't need to know that, yada, yada, yada. And he was right. So if we're going to treat these patients, especially with, you know, a normal saline crystalloid type solution, we have to know that we're not fixing patients with salt water, all right? And that's, you know, what we're, you know, essentially doing with this sodium chloride is putting salt water back into our patient, all right? So we want our sodium and chloride levels with around, you know, within 38 points of each other. You know, your normal sodium off the top of my head, I think it's like 135 to 140-ish, and your chloride levels are anywhere, I think, 97 to 101. So you're wanting those within, you know, 38, 35 to 38 of each other. Well, we all know the pathophysiology of trauma, we have massive blood loss. Our cells become acidotic. We have the, you know, anaerobic metabolism where you get the pyruvate and switch out, you know, the lactic production. And here we come, you know, we have these patients whose tissues are starving for oxygen. We have this acid buildup of lactic. And we come along hitting them with an acidotic fluid, to which has no volume expanding O2 carrying capabilities. Okay, so this kind of drives home this point of, you know, do no harm. We want, you know, good clot formation. We don't want to hemodilute our patients, pushing out clotting factors, O2 carrying factors with our hemoglobin, to, you know, we want this clotting cascade to be able to work. We don't want to make it worse. All right. So when we're, you know, next time we get ready to infuse these patients, let's keep this in mind. So 60 to 90, aiming on our maps. We don't want to, you know, hemodilute them, increase this pressure. You know, we want to effectively manage our patients to where we're setting them up for success. You know, EMS is not a sprint. Medicine as a whole is a marathon. And what we do in the first 5 to 30 to 45 minutes is really going to be the difference if these patients succeed or not. So I strongly, strongly recommend, you know, you start looking deeper into permissive hypertension. You know, really kind of push this on to your medical director with, you know, the choice of fluids. Look into the trauma trial to death. We've done a podcast on it. We did a lecture on it at the Alabama EMS conference. You know, there's a lot of research and data out there on it. We've got about 7 to 8 minutes left. The phone number to call in if you have any questions is 760-283-4606. 760-283-4606. Hopefully we won't have no issues with the phone line tonight. We've had a couple in the past, but we'll try to, you know, hopefully it won't. So call in if you have some questions. But like I said, you know, what we do for these patients within the first couple of minutes, you know, is you know, really tremendous with setting these patients up to succeed. You know, we don't want to increase the acidosis. We don't want to increase the interstitial pressures or the intravascular pressure, excuse me. We don't want to hemodilute them. You know, we want to get good source control, good bleeding hemorrhage control, and get these patients to surgery. You know, all those people with a lot of letters and stuff behind their name, you know, who are better equipped with the level one infusers, whole blood, packed red blood cells, platelets, plasma, you know, and all that to volume resuscitate these patients. You can kind of Google and research on your own the effects of, you know, crystalloid administration in our severely volume depleted patients. So, you know, take from this, you know, 30-minute podcast and kind of expound on, you know, your knowledge base, because I was taught wrong for a long time. And permissive hypertension, you know, is evidence-based. It is evidence-based practice, okay? And, you know, that's not a real well-known term right now in EMS, but, you know, it is in the critical care and in your hospital environment. And it's good quality patient care. You know, I know as EMS, you know, we've got this big drug box and all these fluids and stuff, and, you know, we want to be able to help. But a lot of time, you know, good hemorrhage control, you know, liberal fluid administration, let's maintain these MAPs, you know, between 60, you know, 60 to 90. Because like we've said, you know, multiple times, this is good end organ perfusion. Okay, and anywhere from about 55 to 60, we're still perfusing the kidneys. So we don't have to worry about the renin and angiotensin, converting to angiotensin 1. You know, it's so we can maintain them and get them to a higher level of care. Okay, you know, and like I said earlier, I was horrible at this in the military, you know, until I got to the higher level, higher echelon units, and started kind of realizing, you know, there's not a whole lot of cases to where we have to do, you know, these mass transfusions, other end, you know, just major blood loss, your IEDs, your amputations, you know, multiple GSW, stuff like that. Because the stuff we're putting in, it doesn't stay there long. So, you know, I want you to look into that. Like I said, there's a couple of studies that say anywhere from 250 cc's to 333 are what actually stays in the body or in the intravascular system after administration. So if we keep, you know, just fat, you know, mass transfusing all these fluids without good source control and without a good balance, you know, we're increasing the sodium, which we know the effects the sodium have on the body. We're increasing the chloride levels, and we know the effects that those have. We're making our patients more acidotic. If you've listened to the Trauma Triad course, we know that a 0.5 increase lactic is a 10% increase in mortality. And, you know, lactic is a big predictor in traumas, and a lactic greater than 4 is, you know, a marker of significant trauma. All right, so we have to keep that in mind. 0.5 increase in lactates, 10% increase in mortality. So we don't want to further these patients along. And like we talked about in the trauma triad of death course, when you introduce hypothermia, acidosis, and coagulopathies, that's up to a 66% increase in mortality. All right, and this is the stuff that we don't see. You know, we don't see the effects of, you know, mass transfusion of crystalloid products into these patients. You know, we kind of come in, hit it, quit it, drop them off, and we're on to the next call. It wasn't until, you know, I got into the critical care world and started working, you know, at the hospital on the research, the trauma neuro research side, is where I really started seeing the long-term effects of our care that they were having on these trauma patients. You know, and I really started diving in and learning, you know, down to the cellular level, you know, to the mitochondria of how we were affecting these patients. All right, so let's keep that in mind that, you know, as we kind of hit the streets tonight, hit the air, you know, whatever vehicle you're riding in, and, you know, let's be mindful of how we volume resuscitate our patients, especially, you know, most services in Alabama, I'm really not sure of any that measure pre-hospital lactics. So the new, you know, the new goal-directed treatment in volume resuscitation is urine output. You know, we want that good 30 mLs an hour of urine output, and that's how you know that, you know, our patients are volume resuscitated. Now, obviously, in EMS, we're not going to be around them long enough with them to see this, but that is what we're going for. You know, urine and, you know, keeping our kidneys functioning is how we're going to excrete lactic, you know, down to the cellular metabolism and, you know, the pyruvate and all that converting over. That's how we're, you know, excreting it through our kidneys. So, you know, let's maintain our MAPs. 60 to 90, good end organ perfusion. We're not, you know, hemodiluting our patients. We're not going to increase the interstitial pressures. You know, we're going to try to get good source control. You know, and that always goes back to, you know, good aggressive treatment of our bleeding because, you know, every drop of blood on the floor is hemoglobin, you know, and O2 carrying capabilities, and our clotting factors. So let's kind of keep that in mind as we hit the roads tonight. I actually saw we missed a call. I apologize. We have about 60 seconds left. So be sure, if you know, leave us some comments, leave us some feedbacks, tell us what you think. Still working a lot of the technical issues out, but I think we're starting to get the feel, you know, and getting our rhythm with the podcast going. If you like what you hear, be sure to share us, tell your friends about us. I'm trying to get us to where we'll be on iTunes so we can kind of download some stuff on there. But tell us what you think. Email us. Email me at Daniel Mills on Facebook. You know, any questions you have in the comment section, we see all of them. Share this podcast with somebody tonight. But as y'all hit the roads tonight, stay safe as always, and we'll see you on the next podcast. Y'all have a good night. See you.